Welcome to the Highbury Squad. You can follow us on Twitter at Highbury Squad. In fact, it's the same on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and eventually iTunes. Join me, Sophie, aka at Soccer Diva, Amanda, aka at GoonaGirl1969, and our very special guest, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. It's just like being down the pub with your mates.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Highbury Squad podcast. Joining me tonight is not my sister in La La Land, unfortunately she couldn't make it, but my brother's on tonight, Super Kevin Campbell. Hello Kev.
Hi Amanda, how are you?
I'm good, I'm really good, how are you?
I'm excellent, thank you.
Brilliant, okay, so we've got a special guest Kev tonight, haven't we?
Very special, yeah, dear friend.
So do you want to introduce him?
Yes, I would like to introduce him. He's a dear friend of mine who has been playing football for a long time. Now he's still involved and coaching up young players, still doing brilliantly. Played at Chelsea, Leicester, and a couple of other clubs. It's the irrepressible Frank Sinclair. How you doing, Frank?
Yeah, I'm all good, Kevin. Good evening. Good evening, Amanda.
Welcome, Frank, to the Highbury Squad podcast. Are you looking forward to this?
I am indeed. I'm not, North London's not one of my favourite places, obviously coming from originally from South and spending most of my life in West London at Chelsea, but I don't mind the red side of North London anyway. It's the other side that I'm not too keen on.
We like you even more, Frank.
We love that, Frank. Already you've gone up in every Gooner's estimations, even though we're not keen on the West London Blues. But welcome to them. Thank you for joining us. So tonight, because obviously, right, Kevin, you are roughly the same age and I'm roughly the same age. So we all, you know, I was watching football back in the 80s at Highbury. You were playing at Stamford Bridge. And Kev... Yeah. Kev was, I was watching Kev run in front of me up and down the pitch. So tell me, Kev, how did you meet before? Was it during the games or before?
No, well, I'm a few years older than Frank. And, I think the first time we actually really got to meet Frank was when I was doing a presentation, wasn't I?
At a park in Brixton.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was doing a presentation and Frank was the mouthy one, weren't you, Frank?
Yeah, back in the day, I was very confident, Amanda. But no, but I mean, Kevin obviously remembers the time and I remember it very well because obviously being a couple of years younger than Kevin, I grew up through the schoolboy ranks, but Kevin was a massive name in art in South London through, you know, him being at Arsenal from a very young age, being talked about, you know, in and around the area, there was the likes of your Michael Thomases, your Paul Davis that had already gone through the ranks at Arsenal.
Yeah.
I was up and coming at Chelsea. So, you know, Kevin's name was rife through street football, through club football at them levels. And, you know, the first opportunity, I've always heard the name of Kevin, but never met him. Obviously saw what he was doing as a youth team player. And I was playing in a competition. Yeah, I can't remember what park exactly it was, but I know we were in South London somewhere and someone told me, oh, Kevin Campbell's doing the presentation and that. So I was double excited. We had a good team playing in the tournament, thought we'd do well to go all the way in the tournament. I think we got to the final and lost in the final and Kevin was present doing the presentation. So that was the first time meeting him and I always went away from it thinking to myself, he'll know about me in a few years' time. Don't worry about that. You know what I mean? I was pretty confident as a kid that, you know, I had what it took to get there. And it was through perseverance and hard work, obviously, which you need to put in as well as having natural ability.
Can I ask, Frank, being a Highbury girl, what was it like coming to Highbury when you played against Arsenal?
Well, back in the days, you know, obviously I started playing in the Chelsea side from about 1992, I think, onwards. And obviously Arsenal were very good in them days. And it was never one of those games going to Highbury that I fancied, you know, because, you know, there was an era, obviously, of the Invincibles. And before then you had, you know, you had to mark the likes of Kevin Campbell, Ian Wright, Alan Smith, Paul Merton up top as well. You know, before the foreign stars cut started to come in over and play in your Bergkamp and your Overmars and people like that. So it was never a game that I was double confident going into, but there were certain games that we held our own and we always seemed to do well at Stamford Bridge, but it was always tough going to Highbury.
Frank, could you just let everybody know the type of players who were coming through when you were coming through? Because I think a lot of people don't quite realise who was coming through with you at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, there was a big thing made of, obviously, you know, rightly so as well, when Man United brought through, you know, the Neville brothers and
Giggs
and Scholes and all them, Nicky Butt, all came through at the same time. But we also done something like that probably 7 or 8 years before them at Chelsea. And, you know, it started off with the likes of David Lee and Jason Cundy. That was in and around your Kevin's age.
After,
there was the likes of myself, Eddie Newton, Andy Myers, Jody Morris, Michael Dewberry. There were so many players that had come through. Graham Lasso, Graham Stewart. So we had a youth team basically of, when I was a first year apprentice, we had the likes of Damian Matthew, Graham Stewart, David Lee a little bit older. And for 2 years I played in a youth team that went on to be practically the majority of the first team. And I remember making my debut was against Luton at Stamford Bridge. I was just turned 18 and the back four, I played left back as a kid coming through, and that was purely because I was a right-footed centre-half who could play right-back as well. But I had to play left-back in the reserves because I couldn't get in the reserves with the likes of Dave Lee, Jason Cundy, Gareth Hall in front of me. So I ended up playing for 2 years in the reserves at left-back because it was the only place that I could get in the team. Ended up making my debut at left-back for Chelsea because everyone thought I was a left-back, which was funny enough. And then in that team, I think it was one of the youngest ever Chelsea back fours that played that day. I played left-back. Gareth Hall played right back at 22, and the two centre-halves were Jason Cundy and Dave Lee, who were both 20.
All homegrown.
Between 22 to 19 was the back four.
Fantastic.
And that was in 1992. So we did have Gwyn Williams, who obviously, Kevin, you would have known through coming through youth football. I think he tried to tap you up a few times.
I used to train at Chelsea one day.
You popped down there as well. But it was funny enough, Red, actually, because I was playing for West London Schools and I also represented London as well. And I played in one game and I got an invitation to go to Wimbledon, Chelsea and Arsenal, all within after one game. Now, I looked at it and I thought about, you know, my location, very difficult for me as a kid. I didn't have the greatest of support from family because my mum was working, you know, every hour that God sent to put food on the table. So I was pretty much into my own devices of making it to football all through my
traveling around
traveling and stuff. And I just thought the Arsenal one was obviously, you know, something that I looked at and thought, what a great club, but it was just the location was, I was a million miles away. So I ended up going on trial at Wimbledon on a Tuesday night, Chelsea on a Thursday night, and I didn't go to the Arsenal trial and I didn't go back to Wimbledon because I just felt like Chelsea was my home at the time.
Yeah, brilliant.
So what was it like then, winning the FA Cup, the League Cup and the UEFA Cup Winners' Cup with them in the 1996-97 era?
Yeah, that was a phenomenal time for Chelsea because I think, you know, you look at where Chelsea have gone since the on very successful in both league and FA Cup and League Cup, got a history of that over the last 20 years that have been excellent. But I think it all started when we obviously won the first FA Cup in 1997, the first trophy that the club had won in 28 years. And also off the back of, I played in the 94 Cup final when we got beat 4-0 by Man United it was a horrible day. You know, I was only a 21-year-old and gave a penalty away. Eddie Newton gave a penalty away. So it couldn't have gone any worse for the young player that got thrown in to play in that game. But obviously 3 years later to go back and win that competition was retribution for such a bad day. It was sort of like you get that off of your shoulder, do you know what I mean, sort of thing, and you carry on with your career because we felt like we'd gone back and put right what was wrong on our first experience of playing in a Wembley Cup final.
Frank, you know when Roman Abramovich took over, did you? Obviously, I don't think you were at the club, but obviously you know people at the club. How much, obviously, we know what a massive influence he was coming in. But could you tell us some bits about the change within the club?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I left Roman, I think I left in 98 and he took over in 2000, if I stand corrected. I'll stand corrected if I'm wrong, maybe 2001. But, you know, there was talks about obviously Ken Bates wanting to sell the club. Thought he had taken it as far as he could. And funny enough, it was literally down to one game when Chelsea played Liverpool at Stamford Bridge. And it was, I think it was that, 1999 season, 1999-2000 season. And the winner was basically going to be in the Champions League. Yeah. And Roman Abramovich was only going to take on a football club that was playing in the Champions League. And I remember Chelsea won that game on the day where Jesper Gronkjaer scored the winning goal, which sent Chelsea into fourth, and we finished in the Champions League that season. And then Roman took over the following summer, paid a hell of a lot of money for the club, considering it was massively, I think it was 40 million in debt, wiped out all the debts at the football club. Obviously, Ken Bates got a nice little golden handshake for leaving, and he bought the club for £1. So he certainly done all right out of it.
Yeah.
You know, took on the debt and bought the club for £1, and you know it was a good business decision for himself at his age as well. But you know, at the time we were training at a place called Harlington, which was right by Heathrow Airport. The training ground was very substandard. You know, it was probably like the standard of a League Two club now. You know, there was
no. I remember it, Frank. I remember it.
Oh, yeah, well,
you could see the planes going over, couldn't you?
Yeah, the planes going over. We used to have to stop training every time the planes were taking off because you couldn't hear the manager or the coach saying anything because they were flying over our heads and that. So it was right. It was proper old school. So obviously when he came in, there was a few things that needed to be changed. And, one of them was, you know, he bought, the new training facilities, which is state of the art at Cobham. Obviously, you know, done a lot of work to the stadium as well to get it to, you know, a standard that, you know, is fitting for the Premier League, even though I think now it's probably aged a bit. And it, you know, the owner was looking to do something with the club in the next 3 years and knock it down. And the plans were to go to Wembley and build a new stadium at Stamford Bridge. But it looks like those plans are on hold now because of, what's going on with the owner and not being able to come into the country when he feels and stuff. So, you know, there is talk that maybe the club might be up for sale again.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a sticky moment ahead for the future of where the football club's going to go. But certainly he took the club on, Kevin, a massive place. And we would never have been to the places where we've been over the last 15 to 20 years without Roman's money, you know, bringing in the players that he brought into the football club, you know, to obviously progress as a team that could challenge for stuff in this country.
Yeah.
He also, I mean, for us, he changed football completely, Frank. It was not in a good way for me. It changed the level playing field. There wasn't one. You could buy what you wanted and all the other clubs couldn't do it. Obviously, things changed over the years, but with other buyers, like you look at Man City now, you know, what's happening now. For me, supporting football from very early on in the 70s, I prefer a level playing field. But you know what? Football's changing. We have to move with it. One of my questions for you, though, is who was the hardest player to play against, Arsenal, when you played us?
When I played against Arsenal?
Yeah. Who was the striker?
I mean, they was all tough in their own different ways. You know, Kevin had the physicality, the pace, the power, and, you know, he would be a problem in the box, you know, marking him and stuff like that. And then you add the trickery of the likes of Ian Wright, the cleverness of Bergkamp, and Nelka, ridiculous pace. So I played against them all, which were real top players, you know, even back to your Alan Smiths and Paul Merton when he played up front before he went, you know, into wide areas. But for me, the one that I just c- couldn't get to grips with was Ian Wright. Hmm. And that was purely off the back of, you didn't know what he was going to do. He was so unpredictable. And, you know, one of my strengths in when I played was, you know, I was quick and I could read the game really well. So I could read players and what they were going to do, etc. And that came back from, you know, growing up in street football and the type of skills that were used in street football. You know, not very often.
Yeah.
You'd find players playing at top level that were as tricky as people that you played street football growing up with. So, but Ian Wright was a different level. And the problem that I always had with him, regardless of how well you played against him and you fought, you had him in your pocket, you've kept him quiet all day, and then it'd pop up, you'd slip for 2 minutes and he'd pop up and get a goal. You get beat 1-0, right, he scored a goal. You go away from the game thinking, I had him in my pocket, but you can't tell no one that because he scored the winner. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, he's so instinctive, isn't he?
Oh, he was. And, you know, the type of stuff he'd done, you wouldn't be able to second guess it.
He was my hero, through the 80s. Right. Sorry, Kev. Kev, you were number two. Yeah. But, was he like though? Did he give you a lot of stick on the field with his wind ups and stuff like that?
Didn't shut up. He was so chirpy on the pitch. But I remember the very first time I played against Wright when he was at Arsenal, and I was a younger player then, just coming through, probably been playing 3 or 4 years, first team football. And I remember the first time I marked him, and there was a foul in just on the edge of Arsenal's box. And I was standing on the halfway line with him, and I'm kind of like looking at him in a little bit in awe, thinking what a player he is. And you know what you're like, Kevin, you're looking at the player's boots and you're looking at him and all that. And then he looked at me and he goes, yes, Frank, you're all right. And he started chatting to me and I was buzzing with him. I was like, he knows me, do you know what I mean? So I was buzzing with him and he's gone to me, yeah, I'm buzzing that you're playing now and you're playing every week and blah, blah, this. And I remember I'd scored an own goal and something. And he said, don't worry about that. No, I'll tell you what it was. I got sent off the week before for handling a ball on the line against Blackburn where they was going to score. And I stopped it with my hand to stop the goal and got sent off, got a straight red card for it. And then the week after we played Arsenal and he went, I would have done the same thing. Don't worry about that. Like that, and he was distracting me away from the game. And then all of a sudden, he just set off from the halfway line because the game had started. I'm busy listening to what he's saying.
Sneaky,
and you got him. He got him 1v1.
Love
with the keeper,
him,
but missed. And I went to myself, I can't believe he's just done me up a kipper like that. And one thing I remember saying to him, I said to him, that will never happen to me again. You know what I mean? I couldn't believe it. He absolutely done me. He done me hook, line and sinker. And I just thought to myself, from then on, any player that started talking to me when a game was going on, I just used to ignore him. And they probably thought he's got a right attitude problem, but there was a reason behind it.
Yeah,
he's right. He's fault.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least right. He's taught you a lesson that you're never going to do that again.
No, exactly. He certainly did. But what a legend.
Oh, brilliant. So coming up. Go on, Kev.
Frank, just to move it on a little bit, what do you think about Chelsea now? Because do you still do Chelsea TV still?
I do. I'm there tomorrow I'm travelling down tomorrow to do the game, the Tottenham game tomorrow, the semi-final first leg. So, you know, I've been heavily involved with the media side of Chelsea for the last 5 or 6 years, doing the TV and analysing games and doing shows for Chelsea TV. So it's something that I thoroughly enjoy, as well as, you know, the coaching side of stuff that I'm sure we'll go on to. But, I mean, it's a different place now, Chelsea. The biggest thing, that topic that I always seem to get involved in or have an opinion on is where we go with these youth players at the football club. I mean, you know, we've, over the last probably 5 or 6 years, I think results have shown that Chelsea have probably got the best young players in Europe, you know, consistently winning the FA Youth Cup the last 6 years. I know we went out to Man City recently, but over the last 6 years, I think they've been in, 7 years, they've been in 6 finals and a semi-final and won 5 of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, the standard, they've won the Europa competitions, the European competitions as well at youth level, from the under 18s upwards. And, you know, there's an abundance of talent that I see going out the door you know, season in, season out. And it's so difficult for these kids. And I know it's the same at a lot of other clubs, but my big problem with Chelsea is probably the fact that there's such a change of managers each, you know, every two years. Yeah, exactly. 2 to 3 years maximum if you're lucky as a Chelsea manager. You know, these players have really not got a hope in hell because, you know, if I'm a new manager coming into Chelsea and I've got an abundance of good youngsters, but I've also got the ability to go and buy the top players in and around the world. And I've got to make a point and do something within 18 months, otherwise I'm going to be out of a job. Then you can't blame these managers for going out and buying the best players in and around the world and not giving these players a chance. And it is just a little bit disheartening for me when I see the likes of, you know, Ruben Loftus-Cheek coming through now, Callum Hudson-Odoi, who's someone that I've seen over the last 2 or 3 years is probably one of the best youngsters I've ever seen at Chelsea in all my time there. Yes, getting them. Tammy Abraham going away. There's a list as long as my arm, Kevin, of players that are top players that I think, given the chance, would have done brilliantly at Chelsea, but they don't get the opportunity. And then they you know, it's brilliant that they're in a good environment to learn their trade. But for me, you know, that ceiling that they get to where they get to that first team in between the under 21s and the first team, there's a massive problem where they don't get enough games that will warrant experience to get them in the first team. And then slowly, they move out of the club. And I was fortunate enough that I got thrown in at the deep end. You know, I made my debut because Paul Elliott got a really bad knee injury. He was the number one centre half at Chelsea. I was a youngster coming through. I got thrown in at the deep end and sink or swim. I played. I played the whole season, and I got Player of the Year that season as well. In my first season at the club, I got Player of the Year as well. So I had to swim, but you know, off of the back of that, you know, I forged a career at Chelsea and played for eight years after that at the club. Yeah. And there are players that are good enough to do that, but just don't get the opportunity because they don't get 10, 15 games in the team. They get one or two games. They're out for 3 or 4 months. They get chucked in for another couple of games under pressure to produce the goods. And it's very, very difficult for them. So on that side of it, obviously it's changed massively from my time at the club, which we touched on earlier on.
Yeah. Amanda?
Yeah, no, I just want to jump forward to now. So what do you think of Chelsea's current manager? And obviously, Fabregas has been in the news the last 24, 48 hours. What's your take on all that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, to answer the question of the new manager, I think he's done better than what anyone would have expected coming into the season, because obviously he was coming in a totally different style of manager to the previous one in Conte. And I thought it would take a lot longer for the players to settle and totally change a formation that they've been playing for 2 years, and also a style of football as well. And, you know, I think he's come in and really hit the ground running, to his own detriment, really, because now, you know, he's getting the odd bit of moans and groans because certain results ain't been as well as they were probably, you know, 6 weeks ago or so when Chelsea were unbeaten. The only team unbeaten in Europe they were at one stage until obviously they lost their first game. So, I think he's done brilliant and changed his style of football, much preferred style of football for me. I think, you know, the Sarri ball that they're calling it is exciting to watch. It's all about encouraging players higher up the pitch to showcase themselves and do what they can do in the final third of the pitch, which is really enjoyable. But it's also got a substance of really good build up play as well, which is enjoyable for me to analyse and look at how we go about doing it and what players are doing it in certain positions. So that side of it I've really enjoyed. I still think he'll be under pressure to finish in the top four this season. I think that's a must for Chelsea Football Club, being out of the Champions League last season. I think it'd be a massive hit if they're not in the Champions League next season as well. And also, you know, there's that pressure of bringing a cup home. Chelsea are very used to winning tournaments and winning competitions. So, you know, there's a lot riding on this season and the second half of the season for Sarri going forward. But I still think the players have got probably another 6 to 12 months of of perfecting the way that Surrey wants to play. I was fortunate enough to do quite a few games for Serie A last season and watched his Napoli team play quite often. And I saw what type of football they were playing last season. And Chelsea ain't quite there yet, but they're not far off of it. But obviously, I think there's probably two or three more players that he'd like to bring in, you know, that will help that move on a bit quicker. And obviously the players that are there are still learning a totally different type of football and the strategy behind it.
Problem number one sometimes, Frank, is the strikers in the Chelsea team. It seems that, you know, at times, Eden Hazard is put up there ahead of Morata and Giroud. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a top player. But I don't think he's great with his back to goal. He's much more effective when he's on the half turn or he's facing, you know, the goal.
So, Eden Hazard, you're talking about?
Yeah, Eden Hazard.
Yeah.
So there's been rumours that the club are interested in Cavani. Is that something you...
That rumour's been around a long time, to be fair. You know, a club as big as Chelsea with the money that is behind the football club, you're going to get associated with all sorts of strikers, and it often happens at Chelsea. You know, Cavani's been rumoured over probably the last two or three years. Higuain, you know, there's also been rumours about the lad at Bournemouth. Oh, his name eludes me at the minute. Just made his England debut.
Callum Wilson.
Yeah, there's been talks about him. I think he's a terrific player. I thought he played. He didn't have the best of games when Bournemouth played at Chelsea recently, whether that made of because it seemed to have gone a bit quiet since then. But obviously it was always going to be a tough game for Bournemouth anyway. But Chelsea have always been linked with players and with centre forwards because, you know, there's been so many idols and in the past, the likes of your Drogbas and your Costas. And I don't think Chelsea have replaced Costa properly since he left the club. You know, Costa was terrific as a replacement for Didier Drogba. And Chelsea's fans have been used to seeing someone lead the line that is not only skillful, but physical.
Robust.
Being able to lead the line, robust, rough defenders up, hold the ball up, bring people into play, be able to spin in behind because they got pace as well. So Chelsea have had a bit of everything recently over, you know, having top strikers. At the moment, we've got Morata, who is not got to grips with the physical side of the game here, but he's got a bit of pace and he does look to go in behind with his pace and he's quite decent in the air. If you get the right type of balls in the box, pulling balls back, he can attack them and be not bad at it as well. But his hold-up play is not terrific. Goes to floor too easily. And then, obviously, Kevin, you'll know all about Giroud. He is your ultimate target. Brilliant with his facing away from the goal, but he hasn't got the pace to go behind. If you could mould Morata and Giroud into one player, you'd have a Costa or a Drogba. That's how good them two were. Do you get what I mean? They had everything to their locker. But unfortunately, these two players are good at a certain aspect of being a striker, but not the other side of it. And I think Chelsea will suffer throughout the season because of this situation, unless they get someone in the January market. Now, the problem with that is, as we know, the January market is often a market of a signing of desperation, you know, and not something that is long-term as well. You know, we spent 50 million a few years back on Fernando Torres in a January market, and that was a poor decision, you know, at the time. Because he wasn't the player he was coming back from injury from Liverpool anyway. But it's certainly something that has to be addressed, I believe, in the summer if it's not done in January. But I still think if we sign someone in January, unless they spend another 80 to 100 million again, it's not going to be a long-term signing. It's just going to be a quick fit. And I don't know whether that right thing to do or not. You know, for me, if you're going to get a quick fix in, why don't you call back the likes of Tammy Abraham, who scored 18 goals in the championship, and give him a go, you know, and look at the youngsters to take you forward for at least until the end of the season.
Well, Frank, we are conscious for time, Amanda, do you want to ask one more question?
Yeah, no, I'm happy. I'm really enjoying the chat, actually. It's really interesting. Coming up to now, you know, I was at Stamford Bridge when we played you the second game of the season. We should have won. That's not me being biased. That's me being truthful. If Lacazette wouldn't have given the ball away. No, we had some really good chances that day. And then obviously as the season's gone on, we had our 20 odd unbeaten run. And it's been, isn't it, between Chelsea and Tottenham and Arsenal. Now Tottenham seems to have pulled away a bit. And now United are behind us, a few points behind us. It seems that three of us are going for that one place. Now we play you Saturday week. Okay.
Yeah.
At the Emirates at 5:30 on a Saturday night. What's your view? What do you think? Do you think you're going to beat us or do you think we're going to win?
That's a hard game to call. You know, obviously I saw the game at Stamford Bridge and quite rightly, if you got the same amount of chances that you got in that game, you'd win that game. You'd win the game coming up comfortably. But I think Chelsea are better defensively since that day.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the likes of David Luiz has improved in his defensive side of his game. He's always had the talent and the ability to pass the ball and do special things on the ball. But defensively, there's always been a question mark with him. I think it's a tough game. You know, obviously, Arsenal have been hot and cold as well as Chelsea have, and it depends what Arsenal turn up on the day. And for me, it depends what Chelsea turn up on there as well. But a big part of, you know, Arsenal's strategy should be, you know, trying to stop Eden Hazard, because generally, if Eden Hazard doesn't play well, Chelsea should generally don't play well. And it also depends, you know, what players are at the club within the next couple of weeks as well. You know, there could be new signings on both sides that, you know, could have massively affect that game. But, you know, I think it would be silly to think that the result of that game will decide, you know, whether one of them two teams are going to finish in the top four.
I agree with you.
I think there's a lot of football to be played.
Yeah.
But, certainly it'd be a fascinating game. It'd be one that's difficult to call. I'll be doing the TV for that on that day. So it'd be,
I'm actually I'd be doing really that game as well, Frank. So.
Are you doing the game?
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing the Chelsea TV, so I'll actually be at Stamford Bridge in an empty stadium studios doing the game for Chelsea. So, but one I'll be really looking forward to.
Brilliant.
Well, I'll be in my seat at the Emirates, screaming for the red team, obviously.
Giving me plenty of stick pit side, yeah. I could hear you.
Are you at the Emirates that day, Kev?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Ah, yes, we begin lots of stick. So, Frank, it's just been wonderful to have you on our pod. I know it's an Arsenal one, but we really enjoy having rival ex-players on. We've had loads, but it's been a pleasure having you on, and thank you so much. And would you come back again with us next season?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course I would. It's been my pleasure to be on there. I'd do anything for Kevin. He's my man.
Aww.
Frank, I really appreciate your time. And listen, keep doing the great work, you, John Macken, and the boys at Radcliffe. The top of the league, by the way, Amanda.
I know. You are my team up there because of Kevin. So good luck. Keep going.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Just a quick question on that, actually. Just a quick question. Do you enjoy the assistant managing side or do you not the difference with playing, but can you see now when, say, a player is a bit cocky or something and you think, I get that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Amanda, I've actually been a manager myself as well at two or three different clubs before taking this role at Radcliffe as an assistant. And one thing that I think's been fortunate is John Macken's, the recruitment that we've had. You know, I've worked with some tricky players, that very talented players, but sometimes, you know, often at that level, there's always something missing, whether it's the attitude, whether it's the technical ability or the desire to play football. You have to work out very quickly what's missing in a player's makeup for them to be this level. But you know, the recruitment that we've done at Radcliffe, you know, I've never worked with a better group of players that want to listen, want to learn, want to improve, are ambitious, want to play higher. And you know, it's been a joy to work with them. We've not had a problem with any player. We've got a strong squad that a lot of players are disappointed every week in not always playing, but they stick together, and that's obviously the reasons why we are where we are in the league this season. And hopefully we'll keep going, and an important second half of the season. But we've got our targets, and we're well ahead of them at the moment, and we'll keep getting stronger as the season goes on.
Brilliant. Good luck.
Fantastic, Frank. Really. Listen, Frank, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. And I'll see you soon, my man.
Yeah. See you soon, pal. Take it easy.
Brilliant. Thanks, Frank. So thank you so much, Frank. So that was Frank Sinclair joining us, and it was absolutely brilliant. I really loved it, Kev. I could have spoken for hours.
Well, that was a chat in the pub, wasn't it, with your mate?
It was
so easygoing. He's a top guy.
Don't often associate. Oh no, I know what I'm trying to say, but Chelsea players are not really top of my list, are they? But honestly. Really loved him. Loved talking to Frank. So I really appreciate him coming on. So let's get back to some Arsenal chat. We played Blackpool. Now, I was in a hotel on the last couple of days, so I watched it on a tablet. And yeah. I loved it. I loved watching the young boys coming through. You know, it was great. And I felt sorry for the Blackpool fans. I really, really do. Their plight is so awful up there. And it must be so demoralising for those Blackpool players to play like that, you know, with all the tension going on. But you know what? We look at Arsenal, we're through to the next rounds. And by the time this pod comes out, we will know who we're playing.
Yes.
But now we move on to what's coming up, Kev. West Ham and obviously then Chelsea. It does look like I might be able to go. I just found out. So I may be there on Saturday. Yeah. Just in the last half an hour, found out. Big game Saturday, you know? It's a big game.
Amanda, it's a huge game. It's a huge game in more ways than one. Because if you remember earlier on in the season when we played West Ham, they took the lead and they had a couple of chances to bury us. And we came back and we ended up beating them at the Emirates. But the performance weren't great. I think we ended up beating them 2-1 or 3-1, something like that. And they were probably the better side. And now, obviously, there's a race on. Our race has already started because Man United are breathing down our neck. Chelsea are we level or a point behind Chelsea or whatever. So every game counts now. And this is one we've got to win. I sincerely hope that defense could keep itself together and not go Harry Carey. It's Keystone Cops on us.
Look, I think I predicted 2-2 for Saturday and I'm going to stick with that. West Ham haven't done too badly. I don't want to talk about the defence. I feel like I've had a week off from discussing our defending. I don't know if any of our injured defenders are coming back. I don't know, but what's your prediction for it?
I think my prediction, I believe, was 2-1 Arsenal. Yeah, 2-1 away Arsenal, I believe.
I think that's you had 3-1 for Blackpool and it was 3-all. 3-all. It was 3-0, wasn't it?
3-0, yeah. I had 3-1 for Blackpool. Yep. And this one was 2-1 was West Ham, I'm sure.
Well, I'm going 2-0. I'm going to stick with it. I've just got this feeling that we won't be terrible, but it's not going to be easy going there. No. And our defence, honestly.
Well, they're flying at the minute as well, aren't they? They're doing well.
They're confident, yeah. And I work with a lot of Hammers fans, so I need us to not lose because it's my life will not be worth me living, especially at work. And then, you know, as we were talking to Frank about Chelsea, we might as well discuss it. It's a massive match. And I know what he's saying about it won't decide who gets the fourth place as such, but it will lead from momentum onwards. You know, United are on our heels. We knew as soon as Mourinho went and Solskjaer came in, I knew they were going to win every game. It's just typical, isn't it? They're 3 points behind us, Kev, I think.
That's right.
You've got Chelsea, what, 1 or 2 points ahead of us. It's important. We have to win every game now. Every single game.
Well, I don't know if we can win every game. But we've got to do is we've got to get better results than them.
Yeah.
Haven't we? That's the key. I think United play Spurs this weekend. Don't they? They play Spurs at Wembley this weekend. So, you know, that's another tough game. So it could cause a little gap. We win and they don't win, even a draw. you know, that gives us a bit of leeway to try and catch Chelsea. And then the week after we play Chelsea. So these next two fixtures are key for us. Really are. We really could do with 6 points out of these.
Absolutely. I'm like you. I don't think it's possible for us to win every game, especially as we go into the Etihad in February as well, the beginning of Feb.
Yeah. It's going to be a bit too much to ask.
But you know what? It's Emery's first season. If we end up fifth, we end up fifth. You know, Kev, we're not good enough for the Champions League anyway. So as it stands at the moment, depends who he brings in. And Frank's
right. I'd like us to qualify.
I know, Kev, but I also like to play in a competition that we can win as well.
But you know what the Champions League like. We were in the Champions League for a long time. We got to the final once. It's hard. And if you don't keep upgrading your squad.
Yes, of course.
Then you're going to go backwards. So I think that's the reason why I'd like to get in. Because once you get in, then you know you can't mess about. You've got to go for the top players. You can't mess about with mediocre.
No, I get that. You know? And don't get me wrong. I don't want to not qualify. All I'm saying is I won't be devastated if we don't. Not in his first season.
Oh, yeah. No,
that's I mean, of course I want to be in the Champions League. I love it. But I'm just saying I won't be devastated, especially with, you know, where we are with injuries as well. I think Emery's doing a marvellous job with what he's got, you know, and what's going on and everything. And, you know, he's under pressure. Regardless, I think every game he feels under pressure. And then we come on to, you know, it's coming now into what we'll be in mid-Jan by then. He needs to buy some defenders, Kev, but as Frank said, it's panic buys, isn't it now?
Well, look, I just think what Unai Emery needs to do is he needs reinforcements. So whether it's loan, whether it's whatever, I mean, I hear a lot of Arsenal chatter and, you know, people are saying we don't want Chelsea cast-offs if it was a Kale, or we don't want this one, we don't want that one. Let's be honest. We need someone back there. We do. We need reinforcements back there. And players who have actually played in the Premier League could really help us. We have to... Beggars can't be choosers sometimes. We haven't got the squad that could compete. And if we're going for the top four, we're going to need experienced players in there. So I don't mind how Emery moves and shakes it, but we need defensive cover. We do. We're desperate.
What do you think on Cahill?
Listen, I like him. If it's a short-term deal, we're not saying he's going to be the long-term answer, but somebody like Kale will be, he'd be good short term.
That's what I think.
The Premier League, he's an international player or has been an international player. Still can do a great job. He knows the Premier League inside out. He's won the Premier League. You know, what's there to lose about bringing him in? Definitely what's there to lose, because he will do a better job than Koscielny, who I think is still not quite right after his Achilles. I think Socrates needs somebody beside him. I think Mustafi, he blows hot and cold. So you can't, he's so inconsistent. So I think somebody like Cahill with Socrates could be very good.
Let's talk about something else that's not to do with Arsenal. I want to talk about Man City versus Liverpool. Yeah. I absolutely loved that game. I thought that was one of the best games I've seen in years. It reminded me of the old days, Kev, of proper English football. Do you know what I mean by that?
It was both teams going at it, hammer and tongue, and nobody giving an inch. And it was just tackle after tackle, good quality, but both teams wanted to win. I think that was the key. Both teams wanted to win. And you could see the ebb and flow of the game. You know, the way City took the lead with Aguero was fantastic. You just knew Liverpool were going to come back into it.
Yeah.
They got a hold of Man City. They scored, and then it looked like they were going to take Man City. They were going to go ahead. And then Man City come back and win the game. It was, I think City had technically the better players, but obviously Liverpool had the thrust, and caused City all sorts of problems. But I thought the best team just shaded it on the night. But I'll tell you what, though. I'll tell you, Liverpool are going to... If Liverpool don't win it, they're going to run them close.
I've got... Just like you, I've got a lot of Liverpool friends and a lot of City friends, okay? And I'm not biased with this. To me, City just shaded it. I said that, just edged it. I don't know why. Maybe on chances, maybe I'm wrong. That ball that wasn't over the line, and it isn't over the line, and then it goes through Salah's legs. I mean, oh my life. You couldn't have written the script, could you? Really?
Incredible. It was like incredible.
Any split second different, it would have hit his leg, you know?
Yeah.
I just loved it. I thought Kompany should have been sent off.
I think
it's definitely a red.
Why is it a red, Amanda?
He's lost control and he's hit the ankle, Kev. He's not two-footed. I know it's not two-footed, but that's a dangerous tackle in my head.
In your head it's a dangerous tackle. Yeah. But what he's got to try and do, he's got to put his body on the line to block Salah moving the ball forward. And that's what he done.
Yeah, he's still reckless, and I still think it's a red.
Hey, listen, 6-1 and 2-3s. I'm sure some referees would have given him a red.
I think to be fair, though, Kev, right, if this was us against Arsenal, if that was Xhaka, it'd have been off. I said it straight away. If that was Xhaka, he would have been off the pitch for that. But interestingly, then, if you don't think it's a red, okay, why is it a yellow?
It's a yellow because he caught his foot. That's why. Because if Salah would have got through, I think Stones was coming on the cover anyway. Stones was around on the cover. That's why it was a yellow.
I think
for me.
Okay. Listen, and what we love about this pod is all about opinions. For me, he should have gone for that. Regardless of that, I thought it was a brilliant game, brilliant advert for English football. It was enthralling, end-to-end stuff. Wouldn't it be great if more matches were like that? Seriously.
It would.
So are you going to call who you think's going to win the league?
I still think, look, I've said it from the start of the season, I think Manchester City are going to win the league.
Okay.
I just think their squad is the best squad. Now, you can see Kevin De Bruyne is starting to come back, and Jesus is scoring again. This city squad is ridiculous. They could bring Gundogan on. Listen, by the way, I thought Fernandinho on the night
was
absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, man of the match by far.
On the ball, tackling, tracking runners. You know, it was such a top performance by Fernandinho. Sorry to get off kilter, but I just thought I needed to say that because I thought he was sensational. I at the start of the season, I said Man City, and I'm going to stick with Manchester City. But as I said, I still believe Liverpool are run them close, very close.
I didn't really think about it at the beginning of the season, but about September time, I said to my Scouse mates, you're going to win this. I think Liverpool are not going to mess up again, personally. And again, like Spurs, I don't think they're going to mess up. I think Liverpool are going to win it. I do. I think their front three are phenomenal. What only they did to us, you know, I mean, look, it's not hard against us with our defence, but it's going to be interesting now because Liverpool haven't lost the game for so long, which means, Kevin, we're still the Invincibles.
Yes, that gold Premier League trophy stays.
Oh, up. My life. I didn't care who beat Liverpool just as long as someone did, and it was brilliant. You know, I do. You think City are going to win it. I think Liverpool, I think it's going to be very close. I think it's going to be actually going to be interesting this year, much more than it has been, because City ran away with it last year. But we have to wait and see. So that's it, Kev. Transfer window is open.
Amanda, there is a lot of football still left.
It's going to be brilliant. It's really exciting because there's a lot to go for at the moment, isn't it? City aren't running away with it like they did last year. That was a bit uninteresting. You've got like three teams going for one place with us in the top four. If Spurs don't Spurs it up, you've got
better luck. They will.
Let's pray to the heavens, shall we? Let's pray.
Well, if United do them on is it Saturday or Sunday? If United do them, then we're starting to catch them a little bit, haven't we?
See, you know, I've got a problem with this, Kev. I really have an issue with this, right? In my head, no one comes before Arsenal, yeah? Arsenal first. Whatever benefits Arsenal, I go with.
Yeah.
United beating Tottenham is not beneficial for us.
It okay. is, but it's not.
You know what I mean by that, don't you? Obviously, Tottenham losing every game is beneficial for us. Yeah. But for Arsenal as to qualify, it's not beneficial. So if we had our Arsenal hat on, we'd want Tottenham to win. Win, but then we could catch Tottenham. So it is a... I get it, okay? I never want Tottenham to win a throw-in, let alone a game. So
yeah, but we want United to win then. That's it. Yeah. Simple as that.
I never want United to win anything either.
But just this game.
Yeah, if we beat West Ham, then United can win 18-0 for all I care. But it's going to be harder for us if we're sixth to get to fourth. That's why. I know there's a long way to go, but I'm torn a little bit. I know I'm going to get slaughtered for that because I never want Tottenham to win anything. But I am looking at it anyway. Yeah, let's.
Yeah, but Amanda, do you know something?
Yeah, I know. I don't know what I'm saying.
No, but Amanda, do you know something? We have got a shortened season now, right, to play, whether it's 17, 16 or 17 games left.
Yeah.
If Arsenal, these next two games will shape where we get to, but it won't determine where we get to.
I know.
If we're good enough, we can get in. If we're not good enough, we won't. It's that simple. So, you know, let's roll the dice. As long as we're doing the business, that's all we could ask for. We can't rely on anybody else.
No, we can't. And you know, I do feel dirty saying I wanted Tottenham to win because that's not going to... No, I do. No. Before I left...
No chance.
Never. I know. Never want them to win anything unless it meant us winning the league. But it's interesting. That's going to be a really good match to watch. That is going to be a real... Because they've upped their game, United. All of a sudden, they can start playing, can't they?
And it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's big test.
Yeah.
First big test of his managerial tenure now at Manchester United. So let's see how he handles it against, obviously, the man who everyone reckons is going to be taking over at Man United in the summer, Pochettino.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No, but well, you know, he's the bookie's favourite, isn't he?
Yeah.
To be taking over. So, you know, let's see how Ole Gunnar does.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? We've got a good weekend of football coming up, back to the Premier League. Hopefully we get a good draw in the FA Cup. Famous last words, because when this comes out, we will know. Kev, thanks for joining me on the Hybrid Squad pod. And it's been a pleasure.
You're welcome, Amanda. And obviously we miss Sophie dearly.
I know. My sister from another mister, bless her.
Yeah, pity she couldn't be on.
I know. She'll be on the next one, that's for sure. Okay. And thanks everyone for listening. We really appreciate your tweets, your comments on YouTube and SoundCloud and iTunes and wherever you listen. And remember, always Arsenal!